Yesterday, thousands of mourners attended the funeral of St. Louis Cardinals outfielder Oscar Taveras. The 22-year-old and his 18-year-old girlfriend died over the weekend in a car crash in the Dominican Republic. According to my guest this hour, road traffic accidents kill or injure millions of travelers overseas each year. And if nothing is done to improve road safety, the World Health Organization says traffic fatalities could become the seventh leading cause of death globally by 2030. Johns Hopkins doctors Adnan Haider and Kent Stevens, a trauma surgeon, join us to talk about the most common causes of traffic fatalities and whether new technology, like self-driving cars, presents an answer. That's coming up on Midday after the news. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thank you again for joining us for the second hour of our show. Thousands of mourners attended the funeral yesterday of St. Louis Cardinals outfielder, rising baseball star Oscar Taveras. The 22-year-old and his 18-year-old girlfriend died over the weekend in a car accident in the Dominican Republic. According to news coverage of the incident, Taveras lost control of his car as he was coming off of a curve. The car slammed into a tree. Both he and his girlfriend died of multiple trauma while receiving medical attention at a hospital. My two guests this hour say that road traffic injuries account for something like 1.2 million fatalities worldwide each year, with another 20 to 50 million people injured or disabled from automobile accidents of all different kinds. These accidents put people at a higher risk than violent crime. And if nothing is done to improve road safety overall, this is the important part. The World Health Organization says that traffic fatalities could become the seventh leading cause of death globally in the next 15 years or so. Dr. Adnan Haider is the director of the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit, and Dr. Kent Stevens is the associate director of that unit and a trauma surgeon, both of them with Johns Hopkins, both of them with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. So we're going to talk today to them about traffic accidents, the nature of traffic accidents, the common causes of fatalities, and how new technology like self-driving cars could impact road safety going forward. And first of all, I'd like to welcome Dr. Haider to the show. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Haider.
Thank you very much, Dan, and it's a great pleasure to be here, and I want to applaud you and WIPR for actually talking about a global issue, and a plug for all of those people listening to support WIPR as I do every day.
Well, thank you very much, and Dr. Kent Stevens, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you very much.
What occasions your visit, and we'll get to this in a minute, is a big project that you're working on that has been helped along with a big donation from Bloomberg Philanthropies. To study traffic accidents around the world and see what can be done to diminish their numbers. Before we do that, though, I want to ask you about the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit. This is a great thing about public radio and this show is that you learn something new every day, hopefully. And I had never heard of your unit until we saw an announcement about the Bloomberg Philanthropies money. So what is the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit?
Well, Dan, first of all, thank you very much for asking, and I won't fault you for not hearing about us. But this unit is about 6 or 7 years old, but it builds on a very rich tradition at the Bloomberg School of Public Health on studying injuries and figuring out how we can prevent them, both in this country and around the world. But for the past 20 years, we've been working in many different countries, particularly in low and middle-income countries, trying to study the problem, trying to find out why are people dying on these roads. And we decided that rather than do it individually across the university, we will have an opportunity to coalesce ourselves into a center. And that's when this particular research unit was born. It's housed within the Department of International Health, which, by the way, is the largest and oldest such department of global health in this country. And this is also a World Health Organization collaborating center, which means that we actually have official status from the World Health Organization. We work with them very closely in many of our projects, including the project we are going to talk about today. And this allows us the opportunity to go to many low and middle income countries to work with ministries, academics, researchers, non-governmental organizations, and really talk about why these crashes happen, how we can prevent them, and in those cases where we can't prevent them from happening, how can we at least mitigate the damage done? And that's where colleagues like Dr. Ken Stevens play a very important role.
Has most of the research been focused on motor vehicle accidents?
Yes, in these countries, we do focus on road traffic injuries, although we're aware, particularly on the care side, that if we improve the care of the patient who's involved in road traffic injury, we'll make an impact across all areas of health.
So that's where you come in.
That is where
caring for people after injury.
That's correct.
And part of your study, though, is looking at what causes the accidents to begin with, what can be done to make sure they don't happen in the future, right?
That's correct. And Dan, just to let you know that, as you said, over 1 million people die every year. So let me translate that on a daily basis. Over 3,000 people around the world are dying. That's like 10 Airbuses crashing. If there was one Airbus crashing, it would be on your radio show. We have 10 every single day. And the amount of attention that's been given to this problem is far less than we would expect. And that's why we are very, very concerned and have been for many years. And that's why the capacity of the School of Public Health to actually invest time, energy, and colleagues like the ones we work with in studying this, and particularly looking at what are the major determinants of these crashes, not just in this country, but particularly where 90% of these crashes and injuries are actually in low and middle income countries.
The Bloomberg Philanthropies money that I mentioned will go to your unit at Hopkins and other units in a consortium, right, to look at traffic accidents around the world. This is the second phase of a study, right?
So, Dan, we are very fortunate that visionaries like Mike Bloomberg, who happens to be a Hopkins alumnus and former mayor of New York City, 5 years ago decided that this is a problem where nobody else is looking at. Road traffic injuries are predicted to be an increasing issue around in global health. It's a preventable and predictable issue. And thanks to the work done in high-income countries like the U.S., like Europe, Western Europe, we know a little bit about how to control them. And therefore made an investment of nearly $125 million to work with projects in 10 countries around the world. And we were so fortunate to be part of that enterprise. That first phase is now ending. And the former mayor and his staff and Bloomberg Philanthropies are now looking at investing in the phase two of the project, where they hope to work with 10 other locations around the world in implementing this. And we're going to work with many different organizations in this consortium.
Well, can you talk a little bit about some of the countries that have been studied or some of the regions? I'm curious because, you heard me mention the death of this baseball player. This tragedy is very promising baseball player for the St. Louis Cardinals who died in the Dominican Republic. Where does Latin America, or say Mexico, fit in when you when you're looking at overall surveying traffic deaths? What does it look like there?
Well, first, my deepest condolences to the family and to all of the people affected. Every victim is extremely important. There's a human face to each one of these tragedies. Overall, sometimes people are surprised that the highest rates of road traffic injuries in the world are actually in Africa and the Middle East, very closely followed by Latin America and East Asia. So indeed, countries like Mexico and the Dominican Republic are countries where this is a very important health as well as an economic issue. In fact, in the current phase of the project that is just ending, we had two countries in that region, Brazil and Mexico. We also looked at countries in Africa like Kenya. We've been looking at countries in East Asia like Cambodia and Vietnam, as well as the really big countries of China and India. So quite a vast spectrum. And that's why we have consortium partners that are not just ourselves, but also the World Health Organization and the World Bank Global Road Safety Facility and the Global Road Safety Partnership, all working together in this effort.
Dr. Stevens, let me ask you about trauma surgery and saving of lives of people involved in accidents in some of these countries. One assumes, I'm assuming, so that's an assumption is the premise of my question, that they're just not equipped to handle people who have serious injuries from car accidents, as we are. We're fortunate to have here in this country.
Correct. In this state, we have one of the better systems in the world through the MIMS and the organization of the EMS, the trauma centers. In most of the countries we work in, there is no pre-hospital care system, nor even hospital-based care system with people specifically trained to take care of the injured patients. So we do know, because of the lack of those kind of systems, there is a higher mortality rate even when crashes occur.
Mm. So, for instance, if I just threw a country, mentioned a country to you, say Thailand or Vietnam, also part of the study, right?
Vietnam, yes.
Vietnam, all right.
Cambodia.
Vietnam. What's the picture there when it comes to trauma surgery?
So there may be some ambulance providers that are in the private sector that provide some type of care, but most of those ambulances are used for inter-hospital transport. The pre-hospital care is usually provided by people standing by, or possibly the police, truck drivers, taxi drivers. They are brought to the hospital and then cared for by a care practitioner, either an individual trained in primary care, possibly a surgeon in the higher care facilities. And so they do receive care, but it's not at a very high standard.
Well, possibly a surgeon, if they see a surgeon, not a surgeon, trained in shock and trauma.
They would not, no. It would not have any specific training.
So does that account for most of the fatalities? I mean, I guess, can you tell from your studies whether more lives could have been saved if this element, I mean, one assumes that's the case, but...
Right. I mean, we like to say prevention is better than cure, right? So we would like to see the number of injuries from road traffic just go down. But we do know from some very limited studies that if we put in place some type of care system, that there is an improvement in mortality as well as morbidity. And something to highlight here is that there's a lot of people dying from these road traffic injuries, but many, many more are injured, which, in these low-resource settings, leads to poor outcomes. So an individual may get a femur fracture or a broken leg in this country. They may go on to live a normal life. And some of these relo resource centers where it's not repaired in an expeditious manner or at all, it can be great disability for them. Permanently disabled.
Right. Here's another question. So another question with an assumption in it. I assume some of the countries you studied, the car is kind of a new thing. More and more people have cars than had cars 10 years ago or 20 years ago, that the infrastructure has not kept up with the increased number of vehicles on the road. There's a generality. You can pick that apart if you like, Dr.
Sure.
Heider.
Dan, yeah. I think you're somewhat correct. I think one of the concerns of people like us was that motorization is increasing. At the same time, people are buying not only motor cars, but also motorcycles, which is a higher risk vehicle. At the same time, road infrastructure hasn't kept up, while at the same time, laws and their enforcement hasn't kept up. And so some of the primary determinants of road traffic crashes are things like speeding, things like alcohol, things like not wearing helmets, things like not wearing seatbelts. Mm. Now, whilst each one of those is important, even for high-income countries like our very own here, they are magnified by 10, 20, 30 times in the countries that we are working in. And so we've got to have a situation where each one of those elements slowly comes into place in order to try and address this tragedy on the road every day.
Well, I mentioned Thailand and Vietnam a little while ago. That's where the motorcycle is very popular, right? But motorcycle helmets are not.
That's correct. And it's taken a tremendous effort. And this is one of the success stories of the Bloomberg Philanthropies project that we are seeing in countries like Vietnam, where, in fact, the helmet wearing rates have gone up during the period of 5 years. So Vietnam itself has done tremendous in this in terms of passing laws, in terms of promoting enforcement of those laws. And then with the help of external partners like those funded in this project, we've seen a tremendous increase in helmet wearing, not only for people who are older and more mature, but fundamentally in young people. Because remember, a large proportion of those who die on the roads are young people between 15 and 25.
Mm-hmm.
We are losing these young lives. They could have been teachers and doctors and engineers, but they will never be because of one road crash that we lost their life.
An additional comment, we talk about road traffic injuries, we think about vehicles, but of course in many of these countries, and of course here in Baltimore, the vulnerable user is the one that can be also at risk. So these are pedestrians, the people on bicycles, pushing carts, and particularly in the countries we work in where they don't have the infrastructure, as Adnan has mentioned, those people are even more vulnerable. They're on the same freeways that the vehicles are traveling at high speeds and are at a much higher risk of injury.
It's very interesting because in this country, we had a fairly long debate before we got around to seatbelts and a pretty long debate state by state on the motorcycle helmets. I wonder what that was like. Can you talk just a little bit? I'm curious about Thailand and Vietnam. You said they eventually did pass laws, but it must have been a difficult thing to achieve, given that there was a tradition of just of no helmet at all.
That's correct.
And I think and little public health messaging about it, probably, I'm assuming again.
Yes, and I think that's why we need to learn from countries like Vietnam. And we are firm believers in cross-country learning both ways. And Vietnam had to go through a process of not only convincing lawmakers, but also convincing civil society and making sure that enforcement by the police will follow. And this is one of the key things, key messages we like to give in the world of road safety, which is that there's got to be good enforcement of law. It's not enough just passing a law and making sure that there is a primary seatbelt or a primary law that can catch people for not wearing helmets, but that the police is empowered to actually enforce that. And this is one of the things that I think is relevant. And you're right, Dan, that in our country, there are states with primary seatbelt laws mm-hmm. and there are states that are not. And evidence shows that those states with primary seatbelt laws have fewer injuries and fatalities related to that. And as somebody who's from the School of Public Health, you already know that we believe in evidence rather than opinion.
Excuse me. There are still states in the United States where wearing a seatbelt is not required. I didn't know that.
So I think the primary enforcement laws are those where a police officer can actually stop you only for that reason.
Right,
as
right,
opposed
right.
to if you're speeding and
right,
he happens
right,
to note.
Right, right.
And as of 2010, 19 states in this country, actually, according to the Centers for Disease Control, did not have primary seatbelt laws.
Right. Maybe you have some work to do in those states, Dr. Haider. Adnan Haider is director of the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit, and his colleague, Dr. Kent Stevens, a trauma surgeon with Johns Hopkins, is associate director of that unit. We're talking about their big project underway to look at the causes of traffic accidents around the world in, 10 countries?
Yes.
10 countries. We'll hear more about that when we get back. If you have questions, this is a good time to call. 410-662-8780, our toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309, and the Midday email address. You can address a question that way, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Dr. Adnan Haider, director of the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit. Learning about that unit today and its work on traffic accidents globally around the world. Dr. Kent Stevens is associate director of that unit and a trauma surgeon. You know, it's something I didn't think about. When you travel, an American travels overseas, we go on vacation someplace. A lot of people, you know, use public transportation. Some people rent a car, rent a van or something for the whole family when they travel. And I guess I wasn't thinking about this in that context, but American citizens are at some risk in these countries where you have high accident rates, high fatality rates, high injury rates, and no trauma center to go to if there is an accident. So what can you say about that?
Well, Dan, I think this is one of the issues that really concerns me, because just like when we think about infectious diseases and worry about the impact on American citizens, actually, the leading cause of non-natural death of American citizens abroad is road traffic injuries. And colleagues like Professor Bishai at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health have studied this. They've looked at the causes of death of Americans traveling abroad from the State Department over a 10-year time period. Hmm. And road crashes is, in fact, one of the leading causes of death. So when we think about traveling abroad, we worry about our vaccines and we think about antibiotics, but we should also be very careful in thinking about road safety. In fact, a few years ago, a young man called Aaron Sobel, who was a medical student, traveled to Turkey and unfortunately was in a bus that fell down a deep ravine. His mother, Rochelle Sobel, decided to do something about it and has established the Association for Safe International Road Travel, or ASSERT. And ASSERT, which is based right here in Maryland, is working to improve global road safety around the world. Hmm. And that was born out of this tragedy. So it is a critical issue for us to think about before traveling.
Can I ask you this before I go back to Dr. Stevens with a question? When you're talking about making improvements around the world, I mean, each country is different, but there are obviously some similarities. Are you talking about road improvements as well as the safety elements we talked about, helmets and seatbelts? Are you talking about better design of roads, city streets?
So the World Health Organization is promoting something called the five-pillar approach to road safety, which means that we want to think about road safety management systems. We want to think about risk factors. We want to think about the cars. We want to think about the infrastructure. And we want to think about care. In that, for example, they're saying that the four leading risk factors are enforced speeding, enforce very strict controls on alcohol, that is drink driving, make sure that people have helmets on their heads when they are on motorbikes, and make sure that every driver and passenger on every trip is wearing a seatbelt. These are the four leading recommendations right now out of WHO.
Okay. And Dr. Stevens, I wonder if I could just talk to you about some of the countries that you've studied in the first part of this project. How about Kenya? What can you tell us about the situation there in terms of, you know, roads and the general conditions of roads and the risk factor, and also in terms of trauma, your specialty?
We were asked to look at Kenya as far as care of the injured patient, what steps are made there. So we went in and made an initial evaluation of the system. In all these countries we work in, there is an informal system in place. As I mentioned, whether it's taxi drivers, truck drivers, personal vehicles, police are bringing the patient in. We studied that and then came with a multi-prone approach about how we could improve the care of the injured. We first and foremost engaged local stakeholders, so the Ministry of Health, local practitioners, hospital administrators, to try to engage them in care of the injured, both in the pre-hospital setting as well as in the hospital setting. We also embarked on a large training program, both of pre-hospital care providers as well as hospital-based providers, training them in initial care of the injured and the special requirements of those patients. We've also worked on legislation and tried to put in place policy to protect everyone in the country and give them the ability to receive appropriate care when they're injured.
Do you find in a country such as Kenya that people are still sort of in a state of surprise that I mean, not surprise, but just there's a lack of awareness that this is a serious problem here? I mean, because on some level, you just kind of take for granted that people drink and drive. People drive poorly and cause accidents, or run over a pedestrian. Those come under the general heading of accidents. So, yeah, let's wear our seatbelts and let's wear our helmets. Let's make sure we have a shock trauma center over here. But so many accidents are just going to happen because humans are who they are.
So, Dan, that's a critical thing, which is why you've seen Dr. Stevens and myself not refer to these things as accidents. Many of us in the field of injury prevention many years ago decided that the word accident, in fact, portrays the element of lack of control, lack of predictability, nice. Lack of intervention. So we talk about road traffic crashes, not about road traffic accidents.
I've noticed that. I haven't seen the word accidents in your material here.
And I think that's exactly because of what you're saying, that at a very intuitive level, when people don't have the capacity to influence their lives and their actions, then they will consider it a fait accompli.
Right.
What we are saying is that actually these crashes are both predictable and preventable, provided, of course, the governments, the public sector, the private sector, the civil society is interested in intervening, and that's true.
You know, at the ministry level, there's a priority problem, so we try to make it a priority. But on the ground, there is no expectation that they'll receive excellent care. In one of the countries you work in, one of the towns you work in, Naivasha in Kenya.
In Kenya.
If you walk in, there's an entire ward of individuals who are in traction because of a leg fracture, and they are there for weeks and weeks and weeks. They have no other expectation. They don't know that they can receive better care. So part of our being there is that we do education, we do capacity building to try to improve.
Let's take a couple of calls for our guests, Dr. Heider and Dr. Stevens from Johns Hopkins. Usha in Bel Air, nice to hear. Usha, we haven't heard from you in a while. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, this is a wonderful program. I have to, first of all, tell about my life in India, growing up there and being there until age 24 years. Now, if you go on a road over there, you will find cows wandering around, pigs on the side, goats, gutters into which you can fall, and it's not just the vehicular accidents, it's also the pedestrian accidents. You can stand on a road in Chennai or in Hyderabad, and you want to cross the road, you're stunned. There are no pedestrian crossings. You just have to take your life in your hands and rush across. commingling with regular drivers and so on and so forth. Speed limits are not imposed. People drive like maniacs even on those long roads. And the other thing is how to take a bus. The buses are always late. You have to, just like in Baltimore City, you have to get somewhere, and therefore the buses are overflowing with people. So in order to catch the bus, you catch hold of the railing. This used to be a competition between all of us, who was the cleverest among us who could get on a bus that was just overflowing. You jump onto the bus. You can actually miss the step and fall down. If you look at an electric train or any train, there are people on top. There are people just falling out of the trains and hanging on. This is a real problem. I mean, this is not just solved with do not drink and drive. It's just the population.
Yeah.
It's the money that's available to make better roads, to make better pedestrian crossings. Right. It's the money available.
All right, Usha, thank you. Let's get a comment from Dr. Haider, Dr. Stevens. India is not in the scope of your work here, or is it?
It is, actually. We are working in India. Usha, first of all, thank you very much for your call. I'm originally also from South Asia, so I very much, and I grew up there.
You've heard this before.
So I've not only heard it, but experienced it. Thank you. I think when, first of all, I want to clarify that when we talk about road traffic injuries, we are talking about injuries to both vehicle occupants, to bus occupants, to pedestrians. In fact, if you look at the distribution, there are more people who die on the roads who will never have the capacity to actually own a car. So indeed, pedestrian injuries are critically important. And yes, the context that you're describing, the cultural milieu that you're describing, where animals and humans and vehicles are sharing a space, is exactly what we are talking about. And we are trying to explore why and how we can make that space safer for all of them. And one of the principles of science is obviously to separate out the hazards that cause these injuries from the hosts, that is, human beings that might be inflicted, that might be the victims of these injuries. And that is why our colleagues in India, for example, and India is a country where parts of India are doing amazingly well while other parts are still quite far behind. We've been looking at this issue, for example, in the city of Hyderabad. We've been looking at it in Andhra Pradesh. And indeed, some of the issues that you're talking about in terms of the complexity of the vehicle mix is important, but it gives us the challenge. It gives us the excitement to work in these because, after all, that's where thousands of people are dying.
I like what Dr. Stevens was saying before about prioritizing and raising expectations in all these countries, starting with the government officials, right?
No question. But also with the population. Yeah. I happened to be in Hyderabad just a few weeks ago.
In Kenya?
In India.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You said Hyderabad?
Hyderabad.
Usha mentioned?
She just mentioned it. Okay. And I found that I don't have the skill set to cross the roads there. you have to put yourself in a certain jeopardy every time you cross the road. So you're right. We need to really address this with the politicians, with the policymakers, but also educate the public.
Here's an interesting email. This one is from Dave, one of our listeners, who says, "The work that these gentlemen and their teams are doing is indeed vital. Thank you. However, the key work that is necessary to save lives is to reduce the number of automobiles on the road. Organizations like EMBARQ," he spells it EMBARQ. I don't know actually what it stands for, but he says this organization is funded also by Bloomberg Philanthropies. It's working on increasing quality and the number of public transit systems to reduce traffic fatalities, and they are seeing results. I don't have any information about that handy right now otherwise, but are you familiar with EMBARQ?
Yes, actually, EMBARQ is one of our partners in the Bloomberg Philanthropies-funded Global Road Safety Consortium.
Okay, so you have 7 or 8 partners in this, right?
That's correct, together with the World Health Organization and the Global Road Safety Partnership and so on. I think here's the fundamental premise, Dan, which is indeed that if we can move people from point A to point B in safer mode, that would be ideal. And one way to do that is to get them into mass transport, is to get them into vehicles like buses, like trains, that allow multiple people, which is why, for example, here in Baltimore, we do have a bus system and a light rail system. Similarly, in the developing world, organizations like EMBARQ are working to try and build those systems and promote safe mass rapid transit corridors and transportation systems. It is one of the strategies, ultimately, to help, particularly as we know that urban populations are only going to double in the next few years. And that's what we have to prepare for. So that's a great comment.
And then you just have to be able to get across the street in India to get on the bus, right?
That's correct.
We'll take another break here, and when we come back, more of our conversation with Dr. Adnan Haider, who was just speaking, director of the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit, and his colleague, Dr. Kent Stevens, a trauma surgeon at Hopkins and associate director of the unit. We're talking about traffic accidents. Oh, I used that word. Traffic fatalities and injuries around the world, road safety, and what can be done to improve it in these different countries. If you'd like to give us a ring, if you have a comment or question, 410-662-8780. This is Midday. So enforcement, we come back to that. We were just talking about seatbelts, and the enforcement part is the part you're really interested in. It's one thing to have a seatbelt law. It's another thing, Dr. Haider, to have enforcement of a seatbelt law, right? That's a big push here in your project.
That is, because what we find around the world is that many countries will say, of course, we have a law, but when we go out into the field and measure how many people are actually wearing seatbelts, and we do that. Our unit has a specialized expertise in doing real-time observational studies, and we can do that and collect data very quickly within days. We can tell you how many people are wearing seatbelts in Vietnam or how many people are wearing helmets. And what we find is a huge disconnect. And a fundamental premise we found is that great police enforcement, which makes individuals think, I can't be on this motorbike unless I am wearing a helmet, otherwise I'll get ticketed, otherwise I'll get caught. That fear, that sense, has to be in every rider.
How are we doing in the United States? When you look at the U.S. in the big picture of the globe, because you look at all these, you have a big scan, a big survey that you've done. What did I read last year? That the number of deaths by guns in the United States has finally surpassed the number of deaths on roads and highways, which would be a good thing, except we're talking about 33,000 people per year, Americans per year. I think that's, am I right? Isn't that about the number?
That's correct, Dan. So on the good side, we've made a lot of progress in the past decade. We've actually brought that number down. However, we are still at 33,000 people. Now, that's over 100 people approximately every day around this country, which is a tragedy. And of course, this is the number of deaths. If you look at the number of injuries, that's about 8 times more. And the number of people who get treated in emergency rooms like Dr. Kent's, that's another 100 times more. So on the one hand, yes, we've made some improvement. On the other hand, we are not one of the top performers in the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, countries like Norway and Sweden are the top performers on road safety in the world. So we have some ways to go. Maryland, for example, in this case, amongst the states in the U.S., is also doing reasonably well. Its road traffic fatality rate is slightly better than the U.S.'s, but it's not the best amongst 50 states either. So we've got some homework to do right here in our backyard.
I want to go back to Dr. Stevens with a question with regard to the care of people who have been injured in traffic incidents. It sounds like such a daunting thing to bring that medical infrastructure, health system infrastructure into some of these countries where it does not exist at all now and would be so expensive. That would seem to be the most daunting part of this project, I would think.
There is cost implications, obviously. I mean, especially to have a system as we do here in the developed world. But we do know that there are some steps you can make that aren't as costly. For instance, addressing a few very critical injuries that can take a life that can be addressed very inexpensively with trained personnel.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of that?
So a pneumothorax would be one where you have air between your lung and your chest wall. This is usually caused in a motor vehicle crash from somebody having rib fractures, which then punctures the wound, has air escape into that space. That air continues to escape, unless addressed acutely, can cause a cardiovascular decompensation so that patients can pass. But they can be addressed very easily. And another one is bleeding. Even simple bleeds that happen in a rural setting in some of the places that we work, without their proper care or just pressure on that dressing, the patients can exsanguinate and pass away.
So in an affordable way, you can train people to save some lives up front without having a massive trauma center in place, a state-of-the-art trauma center right away.
Yeah. I'd like to say that we're not going to save this very severely injured, as we're able to here in Maryland with our excellent system, but we want to save those patients who are moderately injured that we can just some interventions impact.
Well, what would be the hope of this project then? Grants would be awarded to different countries for different projects to improve road safety?
So the way we've been working in this current project is that we've been working with the governments, with the national stakeholders, in crafting programs and addressing specific risk factors. So, for example, a country might select alcohol and speed as the two risk factors they want to address, and they've been implementing interventions. And the great thing about this, Dan, is that prior to the investment made by Bloomberg Philanthropies, actually, there was no such grand project going on in the field. So this is a game changer. And that's why we truly believe in the vision of Mike Bloomberg, because in effect, by investing his own resources, he has prodded the world and saying, look, if I can show with the help of many, many colleagues around the world what we can actually do to save lives, maybe other countries, other sites, other locations will follow suit. And we see that happening as a global movement. And right now, Dan, I don't know if some of your listeners know, but we are in the middle of the United Nations Decade of Action for Global Road Safety. So that started in 2011. We've got to do great things by 2020. So I hope that all of us, the public, the civil society, will join in working towards making our roads safer.
Let's take another call from one of our listeners for Drs. Hyder and Stevens. Here's Bernadette in Baltimore. Bernadette, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you for your program. I tuned in a little late, so I'm not sure if my question was already answered earlier. I thank you for your work that you're doing, sirs, and I appreciate it. I'm a former driver's ed teacher in the classroom with Maryland State Law, doing that for 20 years. And I have seen a lot, done a lot, and then traveled to India three times where my accidents occurred, whatever. And I have not heard anyone mention, unless I missed it earlier, what is being done about the training, and I will call it non-training, in India, for example, that I have very close friends in India, one on the Supreme Court as a lawyer. And I know how the license is obtained, and I was shocked when I heard it.
Let's ask that question, Bernadette. What about driver training in these countries that you've studied? Start with India.
So first of all, thanks very much for your call, and thank you for your service to our state as a driver's ed person. I think this is a very, very contentious issue in the field of road safety, and I'll tell you why. On an intuitive level, and for social and ethical and cultural reasons, it is absolutely vital that we have education as a component of the grand road safety efforts. But however, every time we've actually studied in a scientific way under research conditions, what happens to people who get driver's education and those who don't, let's say people between 16 and 18, what we found is that the impact is mixed at best. In other words, some of the studies demonstrate slight improvement, some studies indicate slight actually high risk-taking behaviors because individuals think that now with their education, they are somehow or the other immune. And that's why in our field, while many colleagues will talk about lots of different interventions, they hesitate to talk about road safety education. I believe, and our unit is working to further understand this issue in greater detail, that there is a social and moral reason why education is extremely important. But in fact, you should not consider that as your sole intervention for road safety. It is critical to combine it with speed control and helmets and alcohol control and so on.
Here's Jim in Towson with his question or comment for our guests. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, goodness. If I go to Greece every summer and to a small island, and I've seen a lot of behaviors and studied how people drive there and what the roads are like. They just plain don't have the infrastructure, either on the roads or the hospitals or medical care to take care of injuries. Doesn't exist. You got to go 30 miles to go to a hospital. If you have a crash, you're out of luck. And if you really have a bad problem, you have to get helicoptered into Athens, and people don't make it. I could make $1 million a month selling Denver barriers there because there are no barriers.
And thank you very much, Jim. Again, that goes back to that question about more people having cars than just 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. I don't know if there's a case in the particular island that Jim goes to, but there might have been more goats there than cars, you know, 15 years ago, right?
And in fact, thanks for your call, Jim. And you describe a place which could actually be in multiple locations that Dr. Stevens and I visit.
Everywhere.
In fact, yeah. Right here.
Guardrails, no guardrails.
Right here in rural America, you have expanses of land and roads. And in fact, it is interesting to note that, and I'm making a generalization, that sometimes road traffic death rates are higher in rural areas compared to urban areas. And that's largely because you have straight roads which people think they can speed on with nothing stopping them, including lack of enforcement and speed bumps and so on. And that's responsible sometimes for much, much higher rates in those conditions.
Bloomberg Philanthropies has announced a five-year, $125 million global road safety program. And Dr. Heider and Dr. Stevens, their unit at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, the International Injury Research Unit, will be one of eight organizations in this continuing effort to reduce injuries and fatalities caused by road accidents around the world, working in 10 countries over, as I say, a five-year period here. Could you stay right here with us, gentlemen, while I take a phone call? I want to talk to Russ Hurd for a moment because this is very relevant to traffic safety right here in this country. Back in January 2008, Russell Hurd's daughter, Heather, was killed in a car accident by a distracted driver. November 8th, that's next weekend, marks the sixth annual Heather L. Hurd 5K run at Harford Community College, held to raise money in Heather Hurd's memory. Russ Hurd is with us now to talk about the run, just a little bit here, and about distracted driving and a new law that we have in Maryland. Russ, thank you for joining us on Midday.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Heather and a distracted driver. A distracted driver distracted by what, Russ?
He was actually communicating with his company. He was a tractor-trailer driver, a 61-year-old professional who was texting while driving in the state of Florida in 2008, and he failed to notice nine vehicles stopped at a traffic signal, never applied his brakes, and hit the nine vehicles going 65 miles per hour, and then it was later found out that he was actually texting his company at the time of the crash.
Hmm. Russ, you're speaking to us today from Harford County, from your home?
That's correct.
Yeah. You know, I remember when this happened, and I remember reading about it. You got busy, though, in Annapolis. Tell our listeners about that, please.
Well, literally 2 months to the day after our daughter was killed, we traveled to Annapolis to testify for the text messaging ban in Maryland. It didn't pass in 2008, but we knew at that time that was going to be our mission, that we wanted to get some laws passed in Maryland and across the country to ban these devices and distracted driving. But we've come to find out since then it's not just the laws. They certainly have to be tough. We have to have strong enforcement. But the awareness campaigns and education campaigns must go hand in hand with those laws to be effective.
So we have an amendment to the law that went into effect October 1st. Is that right?
That's correct. It's called Jake's Law. Jake was killed in 2011, and that law went into effect October the 1st, and that actually increased the fine for a crash that would involve serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it could include a year in prison and a $5,000 fine. And we believe that's another strong step towards the ultimate goal of ending these tragedies.
If it's demonstrated that the driver was using an electronic device?
Either a cell phone or texting while driving.
Right. And lastly, Russ, the Heather Hurd 5K at the HCC, the community college, that's coming up November 8th. That's a week from this weekend.
That's correct. We're 10 days away, and that's our sixth annual event. And that's part of our efforts. We try to bring to our community the education and awareness campaign. It's not just a 5K run, but it's also a driver safety expo as well. We bring in simulators for distracted driving, drunk driving, seatbelt use. So we try to educate the public, have a little fun, and raise money for book scholarships at Harford Community College.
Is that what it is, book scholarships?
Yes. Our daughter attended the college, and a lot of people know that tuition is high, but then they get hit with that book bill as well.
Right.
So we wanted to give back to the community by providing book scholarships to students at the college.
Russ, thanks for telling us about this, and we'll post some information about the run on my Facebook page for our listeners, too, okay?
That would be great.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Russ. Thanks for talking to us. Yeah. You know, this is seems like a first world problem, you know, texting while driving, but this must go on. You must be seeing this in China, too, especially.
We are seeing this all over the world, yeah. And, you know, my heart goes out to folks like Russ and others who've suffered the tragedy. Yeah. In fact, depending on how you measure it, in some cases now, right here in Maryland, some people say 30% of crashes might involve distracted driving. Around the world, what we are finding is, particularly in young people, this is a very, very big issue. Unfortunately, there aren't enough measurements and studies that have been done to look and quantify this issue right now. But we think it's increasing. We think it'll be an important determinant. And we increasingly want to take the lessons, the unfortunate lessons that we've learned in environments like ours, and make sure that young people like Heather around the world don't die as a result of this.
What do you gentlemen think of the promise of technology making us safer? I mean, cars have already been made safe. More cars are safer than they were, certainly, when I was growing up. But what about beyond that? There's all sorts of technology that, with regard to vehicle safety, that we're hearing about.
So, absolutely. Technology is one mechanism for ensuring safety, and we believe in that. And you're right, Dan, that cars have improved in their safety capacity since 20 years ago. But it's also true that in many countries, including new cars that are being built, are actually avoiding safety. And there's something called the Global New Car Assessment Program, or Global NCAP, that's actually testing cars. And some cars built in Latin America and in India are actually failing their tests, which means that our assumption that new cars are safer cars may not be correct, especially in the developing world. Having said that, I think technology can be very useful to us. And I think it's one of the mechanisms we can use to help us in the area of road safety.
Do you think in the next year you can come back and talk to us some more? You'll see more improvements? What's a prime area of hope for you in this? We mentioned seatbelts and helmets.
Yeah, our hope is that every mayor, every governor, every politician around the world will begin to realize that to lose young people on their roads in the orders of magnitude that I'm talking about, 10 Airbuses crashing every day, is unacceptable. And we know how to prevent a large proportion of these deaths. Now, let's get our act together. Let's work together, researchers, academics, health professionals, and make sure that the roads that we travel on are indeed safer roads for all of us.
1.24 million deaths each year, it's estimated. An additional, this is the number that kind of blew me away, 20 to 50 million people injured or disabled. And a lot of these, a high proportion in low and middle income countries, where you'll be focusing your project, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, thank you. It's been very interesting to hear about this. So maybe in a year or two, you'll come back and give us another report on this. Dr. Haider and Dr. Stevens, thank you.
We'd love to do that, Dan. Thank you for having us.
Adnan Haider is director of the Johns Hopkins International Injury Research Unit. His colleague, Dr. Kent Stevens, is a trauma surgeon with Johns Hopkins and is the associate director of that unit. And if you'd like some more information about it, we posted some on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page and tweeted out a notice about the Bloomberg Philanthropies Award. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our midday for today. I hope you enjoy the program, and you'll come back again tomorrow in 22 hours, every Monday through Friday here on WYPR. It's the Midday Show, 12 to 2 p.m. for our engineer today, Matt Tacka. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you again soon.
Associate producer Michael Hemowitz. Our engineers are Matt Tacka and Luke Spicknell. Our interns are Connor Graham and Marjorie Goodman. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.